Merħba għal program Minajnejn Barrani fejn jiena kol il-Fitz niltaqa' u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kulna ta' tlieta fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jinstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. I'm speaking to Indubizi Chukwuniere today from Nigeria. The surname Chukwuniere should be familiar to most listeners. Indubizi is Destiny's father. Destiny is the singer who won the Junior Eurovision Song Contest. And Indubizi is an ex-footballer, now a football coach. I will let him explain exactly what he does nowadays.
I used to be a football player. I came as a professional football player in Malta. But at the moment, I'm assisting Branko as assistant coach of Ibanez. We have our family business. We import goods from China, from Egypt, from Dubai, from Pakistan. We have different shops everywhere in Malta and Gozo. So I spend most of my time in the morning working with the family business, and in the evening I come for training as assistant coach with Ibanez.
And we are recording this program the day after Hibernians got a very prestigious and exciting result in a friendly against the super giants PSV Eindhoven of Holland. So well done, Indubizi, and well done to all your team.
Thank you very much.
So how long have you been in Malta, Indubizi?
Yeah, I've been in Malta 19 going to 20 years. And when I came to Malta, I was actually brought by Biggie Kara. Bigekara got me from Nigeria through my agent, MWKZ. But unfortunately, they're looking for a superstar. I was so young, and which I understand them, they want me to play for the feeders team. But I said, no, I'm not going to play for the feeders team then.
Mm-hmm. So how old were you?
I was 17 then, okay. 16 going to 17. So they said they want something more ready. So unfortunately, they want me to be with the team, but they want me to be with the feeders, the youth, the under. Mm-hmm. But I decided I'm going back. I said to my agent, better I go back. I wait for one more year, then I come. Then, unfortunately, I was playing the five-a-side in Paola. Then Julian Holland, he used to be with Freyana. He saw me, he said, no, don't go back. Let me try you with Hibs. So he brought me with Hibs. Then there was Mark Miller as a coach. After 1 week, Mark Miller said, no, they should sign me.
Oh, and you stayed in Malta?
Yes, I stayed in Malta. That's how I stayed in Malta.
Yes, and we will talk more about the football eventually. I do believe when you got Maltese citizenship, you even played for Malta for some time, right?
No. Well, before I came here to Malta, I was playing a tournament with Nigeria under 17 in Portugal.
A national team of Nigeria?
Nigeria under 17 in Portugal. So there was this referee that saw us playing. Mm-hmm. So he introduced Victor Samit. He said, Victor Samit, there is this guy, this Nigerian player, is very good. That is when they came for me. But then when I was in Malta, I went to represent Nigeria in under 21. So every dream is to play for your national team. Mm-hmm. So when time goes, I was invited with the national team. I played this, we call it Super Eagles, like the senior team in Malta, but unfortunately I start having knee problem, and after 2 caps, I was not fit to play for Nigeria because they were inviting me to come and play the qualifiers, World Cup qualifiers, but I know within myself I'm not fit, so there's no need to go there and disgrace myself. So I start lying to them, I'm sick. I wasn't telling them the truth, hoping that I would recover very fast, but unfortunately, I did 2 operations, it wasn't successful.
And eventually, though, you couldn't play for Malta's national team.
No. When you play for Nigeria, if it is under youth, you can still play for Malta. But I play as a senior level. I cannot play for Malta anymore.
Well, that's a shame. I mean, but representing Nigeria, very respected in the international football world. You know, been at the World Cups, the famous green strip. You must be very proud of that.
Yeah. Every dream of a youth is just to represent his country. For me, even though I don't play so long with the national team, I'm satisfied that I can do it just because I was injured. But my dream came true.
So tell me a little bit about Nigeria, where you're from, the city or village or town.
I was born in Lagos. It's a city, but I grew up in Ajegunle. It's a very famous city in Lagos. There is where the superstars football comes out. The most players that play for Nigeria comes out from Ajegunle, because what we deal with, it's like the football school in Malta that they are introducing now. Most of us, we street players, so we can just 4 against 4 in the street. So the talent was there, and where I'm from is like it's not that rich place. It's where people that work for government. Most people that work for government live there, so not that rich place. All we think about is football. So we in Nigeria, but thank God today, most of us make Nigerian proud, and most of us are developing the place more. There is great players coming up from there. Most under 17 players are from Ajegunle. Most under 21 players are from Ajegunle. Even the national team from Ajegunle. So at least there is something we take from there. There is something we give back from there.
So tell me a little bit more about that part of Lagos and Nigeria. What sort of childhood did you have? Were you playing football in the streets, like you said? And were you from a well-off family?
I'm from a good family. You know, my father is very educated. My father is that kind of... I really disappoint my father in a way, but in a way, he was happy with me, you know. We 7 boys, 1 girl, and everybody went to university, except me, 3 of us. And my father really wanted me to further my education instead of playing football. My father was the general manager of, like, you have the dockyard. Mm-hmm. My father in Nigeria, he was the manager of... Yeah, so, and my father destiny, my father way was for me to go to school. But unfortunately, I started making money at a very, very young age, you know. At the age of 12, I started playing for Nigeria. I started going abroad. At the age of 12, I went to Italy. 13, I went to Budapest. 14, I went to Ghana. I was representing Nigeria. And there was this money floating, coming in, you know. And he was happy I'm making the family proud, but at the same time, he wasn't happy because he wanted me to further my school education. Then, but as time started going on, you know, I decided I want to play football. And thank God to my mom. So, my mom used to support me behind, because my father never gave me nothing. If he buy me a football shoe or anything, no. If I want a books, if I want to go somewhere that is something education, he will give me anything he wants. But my mother used to back me up, sponsor me. But thank God, when I was 12, then the government took care of me, you know. Then I was like staying in government house. I never go back to home. It's like the school in Malta, the private school. So the government was, till I was 16, that I started playing for Nigerian League at the age of 15.
So the government was taking care of you because you were a footballer?
Yeah. They gave me a house. Mm-hmm. Not, we were like 16 of us, mm-hmm. or 18, yes. They gave us a house, a big house that we were living. So the feeding, they were taking care of it, they were paying us bonus. Mm-hmm. And when we travel, it's like playing for in Nigeria is you rich, because every day there is what we call allowances. A day allowances then was $80.
Oh, wow.
And I'm talking about 1994, 1993 is
lots of money.
A lot of money. So mm-hmm. you want to play. You feel like I want to be part of this group, yeah. You know, because when we come out, we wear nice clothes, we dress, everybody want to be like us, and yeah. Amunike was with us then, but even though he's older than us, Emmanuel Amunike that plays for Barcelona, he was with us then, yes, he was with us, but he was 3 or 4 years older than us. So he moved then, after when he was 21 or 20, he moved to Anderlecht, he moved to Egypt, mm-hmm. from Egypt, then he moved to Portugal, Sporting Lisbon. Mm-hmm. So, my youth was, thank God I used it properly, because some of my friends went into bad habits. Mm-hmm. But I focused on football, and the money did not say, because this money, I lose my way. So, but I thank my mom for that. It was... Mm-hmm. My family comes once in a while. I have family in London. Mm-hmm. I go and visit them. I'm going on Friday. One of my cousins is getting married. I'm going to miss the game against Pembroke, okay. because his father is dead. So I'm going to be like his father, witness. So we still keep contact with family. Yeah.
Absolutely. And now you have your family here in Malta as well, but we'll talk about that soon. So, the agent offered you or suggested you come for a trial in Malta.
Yeah.
And did you know anything about Malta? You, yourself, and also Nigerians in general, do they know anything about Malta?
Believe me, you know, when he came and he said, I want to take you to Malta, I was like, yeah, it's Malta. Then everybody dreamed me in Nigeria is to play for Ajax, because there was Kanu Wankwo, there was Finidi George, they just won the Champions League with Ajax.
Okay.
All Nigerian dream was to play for Ajax. So I said to him, no, I want to go to Holland, not Malta. I said, no, because Malta is playing Champions League. If you prove yourself, teams will see you there and they will come for you, you know. But then, sometimes you don't regret. How will I put it? I never regret the past.
Mm-hmm.
I try to implement mm-hmm. things to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always a guy, no matter what, push me back. I want to win. I have two visa. One to go to Rumstock in Germany by Jonathan Apoborie. He was Nigerian international. He wanted to take me, saw me play, did my visa to come to his youth club. Then this agent called him, Henry KZ, he got me a Maltese visa straight away. And I have to decide. My friends want me to go to Germany, don't know Malta. But I slept 2 days, I said, no, let me go to Malta. And when I came to Malta,
Why did you make that decision? That's so interesting.
Yes, I made a decision because, you know, I'll tell you the truth, the agent that got me have a very sweet talk.
Okay.
So with his talk, he brainwashed me.
Okay.
So brainwashed me that I don't want to hear what friends are saying. Even up to today, I'm telling you, Jonathan, don't talk to me.
So he's a very good agent. That's what agents do.
Yeah. He brainwashed me, and that's when I came, I wanted to leave.
Huh?
When Big Kala said they don't want me, mm-hmm. I wanted to go back. I know there's a lot of opportunity then. There's agents that they after me.
Mm-hmm.
More than 50. I choose, not them choose. So it's like everybody wants me. So I wanted to go back. But sometimes, you see, things in life, it's not the way you want it. Sometimes you want it this way, it doesn't work the way you want, it works the way the Lord wants. I put it that way because I believe in God. So no matter what, you know, even in Nigeria, people always say, where you finish your career is not where you're supposed to finish. Because where I'm from, they put me up above a lot of Martins, you know, where Martins or Bafemi is, where they thought I'm going to be that kind of player, where Kanu is.
Mm-hmm.
But I never, when I go back, like last 2 years I went to Nigeria, we were talking to my friends, I was with players from Spain, they're looking at me, they said, we thought you would be the famous Nigerian player. I said, but where I am, it's not how famous you are, it's how people welcome you. See, in life, I don't want to be famous, I want to be okay. Everybody want to be famous, yes, but if it doesn't come, what you have, you have to be content with it, you know, so...
And you are content.
Yes. And blessing, I came here, I never knew, believe me, that I'm going to have a family in Malta.
Mm-hmm.
I have a family, God bless me, with a beautiful girl, a beautiful boy. You know, things, sometimes not the way you want it. It push you around.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the moment, and I'm satisfied and I'm happy.
In the BC, or Woo Woo, as they call you, your nickname, when you first arrived and you came off the plane, right? Obviously not directly from Nigeria because there are no direct flights, but maybe from Rome or wherever.
From Rome.
From Rome. You landed in Malta, you came off the plane, and the first 24 hours in Malta, what did you think? Did you think, what is this place, or how nice? Well, what were your? Do you remember what you thought?
It's like I said, it's not like Germany, it's not like Budapest, it's not like Rome,
mm-hmm.
it's not like France, the place I've been, but it was very hot. It's just similar like Nigeria. So I said, this place is very hot. Wow, you know, I was impressed because most players that comes back from Europe, they tell you in cold weather you cannot play football. It's very cold and you have to put on deep heat, you have to do this. But when I came, it was very hot. I said, I was a bit, yes, I can play football now. People can see my quality, you know.
Okay.
It's not cold that I cannot show my quality because in cold weather, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cold. You can't, or when it's raining, when you're a technical player, you can't play on rain. Your techniques will not show.
Mm-hmm.
So I was afraid that I'm coming in when it's going to be cold or winter, but I was impressed with the weather. So I was impressed with the weather and with the people I met.
Mm-hmm. They made you feel welcome?
Yeah. When I came, I went to the Bikikara president, immediately was at the airport. Mm-hmm. He shoot me, we went straight to the hotel. He was, you know, they welcomed me very well. You know, this is my first time going abroad as a professional. Mm-hmm. So I was welcomed very well. So I was like, that's good. I feel welcome here, so I'll give them what they want.
Okay. And you told us the story of how you eventually ended up staying here. And the first few years in Malta, how hard or difficult were they for you? Or easy?
The first year was, I was determined, you know. Then, Hibs paid a lot of money for me because I was playing Cincinnati Stars of Lagos. Hibs have to pay 50,000 for my transfer. And when
in those days it was still Maltese lira, huh?
Yes. So when they paid the 50,000, and I was like, now my career have to start. But then I was a little bit upset because then I wasn't playing. I was playing for the minors. They want me to play for the youth till I'm 18, and I was like, but the money they pay was too much for me to say reject because the club in Nigeria will not refund it. So I'm Iberian's property now. So what I did was I keep calm. I played for the minors for 3 months. Then Mark Miller, the result was not coming with the senior team. So Mark Miller introduced, Mark Miller said, no, I want to play him because in training I give my best. So after 3 months, I think December 3rd or 4th, I have my first derby. Boom. Since then, grab the jersey. No turning back. I keep on playing. So it was, at the beginning was not bad. Then after 2 years, I went to Nigeria, holiday. I got a very terrible accident from the lift. I was driving, me and my friend. I have a serious accident that I almost end up, the girl, I was with a girl and two boys. The girl paralyzed for 6 months, but with therapy and...
Is this a car accident?
Yes. With therapy and cold, thank God now it's okay.
Okay.
But I faced a lot of back problems. Mm-hmm. When I came back to Malta, I went to different professors, different physiotherapy. They told me you can't play football anymore. I said, because your back, something happened, you know. For 2 years, I was still playing, but I was playing with big pain. But thank God, one day, there was this Swedish woman from Sweden. He said, you don't have a problem. You just have a thick switch. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Bezina, the president, said, this is someone else, just for the money. Because everywhere we go, it's just for the money. There was no improvement. But believe me, after 3 weeks, there was big improvement. Everything was getting better and better. And that year, it was my best season. We won the league, we won against Sherbourne. Mm-hmm. I was feeling no pain. Mm-hmm. I was training properly. I give them back. Mm-hmm. They believe in me. So there was obstacle, there was happiness, there was joy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, everything was...
Yeah, it came together, perfect. What about your life outside of football? I mean, your social life in Nigeria and then your social life in Malta. I mean, how do they compare?
Where we're from, we're lively. We like friends, you know. We grew up, every night we stay with friends. This one comes down from his home because we live together. We call it like a ghetto life. So at night, in the afternoon, we stay, we talk, you know. So it's in Nigeria. So when I came in, it's not like that, you know. You see your friend every 6 months. Mm-hmm. Or in the game when you're playing against your friend, we're not too a lot of Nigerians then. So what we do is after a game, there is one place we used to call Havana. So we always meet in Havana after a game, and you know, people use that word to know we blast. Oh yeah, because we don't go to any other clubs. We don't like other clubs because they play this, they are boom 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 boom. And we like hip hop and R&B. So the only place to go is Havana. And Havana is just for people, say it's black home.
Club, yeah.
It's a black club, so...
But it isn't, because it's for everybody.
Yes. Yeah. So, we always meet there, and, you know, with time goes on,
You made lots of friends.
Yes, a lot of friends, the girlfriend, family of the girlfriend, this one, you know. As time going, things start coming together, you know. You start enjoying, in life, I always tell my friends, there is the good part and the bad part. In life, you don't judge because this Maltese is not good to you, means it's not good to me. Okay. You don't judge because this Maltese is racist, means it's racist to me. In life, you don't, if it's racist, as long as you know it's racist, respect him, let him respect you. In life, this comes when you understand these things, you will live with the people with peace. Mm. But when you don't understand it, you will keep on having problem with these people. Okay. People have different opinion, different lifestyle. I have my own lifestyle. Maybe I'm temporary, maybe I'm too tempered, maybe I'm jovial, maybe I'm happy. Other people maybe they're sadists. Everybody have his own way of living. Just respect people's lifestyle, and at the end of the day, people respect your lifestyle. People don't respect your lifestyle, then
you don't make contact, you stay away from them.
That is it. Instead of you to cause problem, you just he doesn't want to be your friend, let it be.
I'm glad you brought up this point, though, because I want to discuss it a bit. Did you have a lot of problems? Did you face racism? A lot? A little? I mean, racism exists all around the world. I always make this distinction. But it does exist in Malta, and I want to discuss it. So, did you get respect in Malta? Did you get racism? I think 20 years ago when you came, there were much less black people in Malta than there are now.
The only problem is, I don't call it racism, I call it ignorance. Mm-hmm. Because some people say racism, you know, sometimes, yes, you get anger, you say, oh, it's racist. Not racist, it's ignorant. I'll give you an example now. I'm with my wife in the club. We're talking, I went to buy a drink. Somebody will come up to my wife and say, what are you doing with that black monkey? Not because he want to say it. And I come. Not because it's racist. Just because that is the way I think he can trick my wife or my girlfriend to listen to what he wants to say. You understand?
Get attention.
To get attention, you know. But they don't know you push her away with that word, you know. Uh-huh. You know, when I came here, I have a problem with that because I've got 3 police cases with such incident. I was new, 1999, 1999. I was in Pacheville. I was just with my friends. I went around, there was this girl, I think it's Ips supporter. All right, Chukunye, how are you? Nice game today, you know. I said, ah, how are you? That's good. Are you at the stadium? Yeah, keep coming, you know. Support us more, you know. Mm-hmm. Then there was these 3 guys with her. They said, are you talking to this black man, you know? Yeah. And I lost it. I went to them. I said, what do you mean? Sit in front of me. If you have the guts, he said, yes, you're a... I'm saying, I said, why? I punch him, you know. Then we went downstairs. I regret doing that, but I punch him that the ambulance have to come for him, you know. So after 3 months again,
you were with your wife?
Yes. And this issue, he also end up in court. That's the problem in Pacheville. You have to go to court. And the flash news is Chukunyere fought in Pacheville. You know, so
people make assumptions.
You don't understand what happened, why you fought, you know.
Yeah.
But people who were there will understand, no. But about 3, 4, 5 years ago, I said, no, no matter what they say, this is, like I said, it is ignorance. It's not because they're racist. People that are racist will not come out in front of you and say those kind of words.
Mm-hmm.
They won't, you know, they keep themselves, mm-hmm, because they know they're going to face problem. It's just jealousy, ignorance, you know. A lot of white people are not, they feel inferior,
mm,
when they see you with a beautiful girl,
mm,
or they see you talking to a beautiful girl. That's the only problem that comes. They feel inferior, that
insecurity.
Why is she with him? What do you know?
They see it as competition.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That is the problem. So that's the only problem I see most football players have. You know, not because in Malta there's no racism. The racism is just few. No matter what they said on the news, or I don't.
So you think there's a few racists, but a lot of ignorance?
Yes. That's it. I put it ignorance, a lot of ignorance. For example, I'm telling you, I'm driving, somebody hit my car behind me.
Okay.
And she said to me, do you have a license? I said, why?
She assumed you don't have a license because you're black.
Thank you. You have a license? I said, why? First thing you do, let's call the warden. Why are you asking me if I have a license? He said, because if you don't have a license, it's better you go away. You know, just ignorance. You just, they think, you know, which, You know, the white believe they are superior. You know, let's put it that way. And they think whatever they come across a black man, all black men are just ignorant, which is not that, you know. And when they meet the one that's not ignorant, you know what they say? You arrogant. You're not arrogant because you know you're right. So once you know you're right, you arrogant. Look how arrogant he is.
That's unfair.
You see, look how arrogant he is. They don't look, what's the problem? It's very arrogant. But you know, I'm arrogant when it comes to that. And I stand on it, yes, I'm arrogant. You said so. But I'm not arrogant because the truth hurts you. So I'm arrogant. But if I just walk away now because I know you're superior than me, I'm not arrogant. I'm stupid black man. That is one of them. But when I stand for what is right, it's arrogant. So, but
sometimes you can't win.
Yeah. So I'm used to them now. So sometimes you just walk away.
But things are better now?
I'll tell you, things are improving. When I mean improving, thanks to the law.
Okay.
Thanks to the court, you know. I'll tell you, I've been in Malta, all my case in the court of law, I won it.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because of racial abuse.
Racial abuse.
So yeah. I always win my case. So if they think their ignorance can help them in the court of law, it doesn't help them. They always lose. So it teaches them how to behave in the streets. So the law don't favor the ignorant one. So most of them suffer in the court of law. Most of them, when they go to court, they realize I was wrong. Some of them don't even know what is court. They don't know what is law. You know, they just think, as long as I'm with you in the court of law, I will win. Whatever I say, they will believe me. It's a proof. It's proof, you know. So, but things are changing. Things are getting better, you know. We're moving forward.
How are things for your children?
For my children, I tell you, for now, I hope it continues. They're happy. There is no... at the moment, I tell you, my children have never no problem at school, except once, when my daughter was 8 years old. There was this girl, because her father was a policeman. She was trying to bully my daughter, you know.
Oh, okay.
And my daughter never tells me. She tells her mom.
Okay.
She keep on telling her mom. So I never knew about it. So one day, my daughter cannot take it anymore. My wife cannot take it anymore, because my daughter said, I have to tell daddy. And my wife knew who I am. I won't take it. So, but when my wife went to the office, my daughter said to me, Dad, there is this girl. I've been telling mom. She's been always, when I'm in the bus, because she used to go with the bus, transport. I said, leave it. I said to her, the mom, call the teacher. Try to tell the teacher first. Tell the principal, what they call it, the head of the school. But she didn't stop. I was wrong, but I have to do that. One day, they came from school with the van. I stopped the van, and I said to her, you're still young, you're a young girl. Don't put your family into problem. And don't put yourself into problem. You're still young. It's not from you. I think it's from home, what you hear back home. From your mom and your dad. That's why you behave in this. You're 15. She's just 8 years old. You're 15. She's just 8 years old. So stop doing that. I'm begging you. I know it's not from you. It's from your dad. She stopped.
Okay.
From that day, she become a best friend.
Oh, so your appeal worked?
Yes, she become a best friend. Sometimes, you know, you tell them things that touch them. Because children are innocent. Any children you see like that, they are innocent. They don't know nothing. It's from back home. It's what the parents, when they sit down eating dinner or lunch or breakfast, it's what they interpret to them. They put them into them. Then they go back to school, they find who to bully. Or children that are not happy at home. They want to bully somebody to be happy. You know, so, but we need to teach them. You need to bring them back to their senses. By talking to them in a cool manner.
There are good way. In a good way, yes. There are certain laws in certain countries that are against to stop racism, to stop hate speech, it is called. Do you think Malta needs more of those kind of laws? Do you think that kind of thing will work, and is it positive, or do you think that we should just let things develop naturally the way they are doing?
my suggestion, my opinion, mm-hmm. racism will never stop. Mm-hmm. The only way is keep on teaching. Mm-hmm. The more they learn, the more it reduces to not be. You cannot stop. It's been 205 years, not today, a long time ago, the racist issue start coming up. Uh-huh. Now we live in more than 50 decades or 100 decades, still there is racism. Mm-hmm. So it's all about ignorance. It's what I impart to my children. My children will impart to their children. Mm-hmm. The children will impart to children. But by the time education starts coming in, mm-hmm. It's not something you fight. Mm-hmm. It's not something you speak. Something you come with. It's something you lecture. Mm-hmm. It's something the priests have to do. Mm-hmm. The teachers, the prime minister, it's everyone that people are looking up to, mm-hmm. that can stop this. Obama, prime minister of England. It's not just something you tell me you have to put law. Steal the law, people will fear the law. People know that if I steal, there is a law. They stay still. Mm-hmm. So it's not about the law. It's all about educating one another.
I interviewed the American ambassador earlier in the series, and she said that in America what helped a lot was role models, black or other races, being seen on television in positions of power, you know, policemen or judges or in America. And do you think that perhaps, you know, there's role models in football such as yourself and Alfred de Fionn? Your daughter, Destiny, now is a popular Maltese singer, will represent Malta. Do these kind of things, do you think, are making things better, will help?
Yeah, it will help, surely. It will help. When people look up to you, when you go and talk to them, they listen, it helps. But the same America they are talking, I think America is the worst racist in the world.
They still have a lot of problems.
They have big problems. In Europe, there's few problems which can be solved because of ignorance, not because of hatred. Mm-hmm. Europe, I believe, few are hatred, but a lot are ignorance. Mm-hmm. It will never. But when you talk about Europe, yes, let me put it, but let me say in Malta, yes, it can. It can have people like Cohen, people like Griffa, mm-hmm. people like, you know, this model, people like Iro Roscoe, people like, you know, big musician. Yes, they can turn things around. They can help.
Oh, you mean when they speak against racism? Even the president of Malta is very active.
Yes, they can help. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They can reduce it, mm-hmm. but it cannot stop. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It cannot stop. So they can help to reduce it. Mm-hmm. They can teach a lot of people, educate a lot of people mm-hmm. by their speech, because people listen to their speech, even by the Facebook, internet. People follow them. These are people that follow a lot of stars. It can help in Malta. I'm telling you, Malta is not that bad when it comes to racism. Malta is not that bad. Yeah, believe Malta, most are ignorance, not racism.
Qed jintisimgħu il-programm Mingħajnejn Barranin fuq Campus FM li jixxandar kull nhar tat-tlieta fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jitstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. I'm speaking to Indubizi Chukwuniere from Nigeria. When and how did you meet your wife? We can say her name. And how did that relationship develop?
Well, you know, I met my wife in Pachivu, to be honest. You know, I was in Pachivu one day. I said, oh, who is this beautiful girl? She was 15. I didn't know she was 15. I was 17, and I said, oh, who is this beautiful girl? Then our friend said, oh, she likes you. Go and say hi. I said, no. Then our friend gave me tips, so I didn't say hi. So at the next day, you know, she came, and I said, hi, how are you? What's your name?
She came and stood next to you.
Yes, she came. Yes. I said, wait, what's your name? She said, my name is Alexa. So, Alexa, nice meeting you. You came for a drink? He said, yes. Then things started, you know, going on after 2-3 months. Then she invited me to her house. And I went there. She lives, her parents live in Bigikara. I live in Bigikara now. So went, it was a Christmas day. I went there, they welcomed me very well. Mm-hmm. Since then, I fall in love with her. Then we start slowly.
Her family welcomed you.
My mom, my dad, they welcomed me. Even, you know, I used to think before, that's why I say I'm ignorant. Let me put myself, I used to be ignorant. Sometimes I used to say, oh yeah, why the parents don't want the black man to go with the daughter? Now, when I start becoming more, thinking like other people, if you have a daughter, let me put myself example. I'm in Nigeria. I live in Nigeria. I have a very two beautiful daughter. And maybe a guy from London just come, a white guy. After I've trained my daughter for so long, then one white guy will just take her away one day. Maybe I won't see her anymore. You know, this, we think a lot, but people don't think this. People just say, oh, why they don't want me to marry their daughter? No. They want to secure themselves. Who are you?
What you, can you, you, you know? You're trying to put yourself in their place.
Thank you. Yeah. Who are you? Yes. What can you afford? Okay, you don't have a job. You want to marry my daughter? No, this is what you think. I'm thinking now because I used to think about it 6-7 years ago when I started realizing. I said, now imagine I have a daughter, let me say, and somebody from nowhere just come. I will feel it.
Yes.
Maybe, but if it's a will, it will happen. But I will, who is this guy? Well, you know, so these are what they feel those days. But you know, you just, we, education is everything, is the key to knowledge. You know, when you're more educated, you, the more you learn, the more you move forward. So I don't, then I was one of the most luckiest Nigerians. They welcomed me well, up to the first day, to the last day, to today. Mm-hmm. I'm welcome and I'm loved. But then when I see my friends, maybe they grumble, they said no, they are racist, they don't want me to marry their daughter. First of all, I look at you. First of all, you need to have a good job. Mm-hmm. She wants to secure her daughter.
Yeah.
So don't start this game and they tell me, oh, you're like one of them. I said, because you think only for yourself. You don't think what people other think, what people want for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, that is, but now they start realizing what I'm saying is true. Mm-hmm. You know, Kunyere said it before. What he was saying was real.
So you got married and you had children. Tell us a little bit about Destiny and your son, who, tell us his name.
Isaiah. So Destiny, when I, 2001, my wife was not married. My girlfriend then got pregnant, you know. And the parents was like, what you've done to my daughter, mom? Then after like 3-4 months, they agree they're going to sponsor us for the wedding.
Okay.
The father said, no, my daughter cannot have a baby without getting married.
Mm-hmm.
But I said to them, nobody will do my wedding for me. When I'm ready to get married, it's not by force. You have to be ready to face the consequence of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready then. Then the father was very, very upset. He said, please. He came one-on-one with me. He said, please. Please, I want you to marry. I said, no. I said, if I married her, I might not be with her after 2 years. You force me. I'm not ready. How will you feel if I marry her and we're not together? What will hurt you more? You want me to marry her and leave her 2 years? Or you want me to live with her for life? He went back home. He called me. He said, I'm sorry. When you're ready, do it. I didn't get married after 5 years. Then I got married up to today. We've been together for 18, 19 years. Sometimes I said to her, father, you see? So sometimes it's not what you want. And today you always appreciate it. It's what compromise, what will suit the situation at that moment. So after then, the next year, I have a son, Isaiah. My son is, man goes with the mom. Women goes with the dad. My dad is, my daughter is close to me.
Mm-hmm.
My son is close to the mom. So, but when they start growing up, you see it, you talk, you know. When my daughter is saying, it's like when she was six years, she used to come to me and say, daddy, I know how to sing. They want me to sing at school. I said, we are destined to wait a bit. Okay, sing for me. She'll start singing Nigerian music. I'll start dancing. I have the video even. I'll start, when I show it to her, she'll start laughing. I'll start dancing. You know, at the age of 8, she said, daddy, they want me to sing at school. I said, tell your mom. She said, mom, they want me to sing, mom. No, why do you sing? Not here, don't sing. I want you to finish your school. Then I said, no. She said, good singer, we'll go and watch her. So we went to the school. We watched her singing. I said, my God. She's not that much. I said, she's trying. Let's find something. Then we start going around to look for a nice teacher for her. Say, no singer teacher, but no one accepted her. We went to 3. They said, wait till she's 10 years.
Okay.
Wait till she's 10 years. Then there was this lady in Paola, Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
She accepted her. At the age of 9, she started going to competition. Every competition she goes, she won. She win. So from there, she was going till up to today. thank God for our success. And then my son is that kind of, my son is only close to me when it's time for football. When it's time for football, daddy football. When he wants to talk about football, yeah. When he wants to watch football. Yeah. But when my son was young, never. He never said, dad, ma, every time, ma. I said, oh, where ya? There is dad in this house, huh? He said, oh, I don't want to bother you. I talk to mom. But now it's coming back to me. Before it's always ma, now it's dad. Dad, you see, so I'm getting him back through football. Okay. You know, so he watch football with me, he stays with me, he wants to watch football, he wants to come to training, he wants to train with Hibs, the senior team he wants to watch. Mm-hmm. So now the mom is a little bit jealous. Mm-hmm. The mom is a little bit jealous. He's saying, ah, you're taking him away from me too. But no, I'm not taking him away from me. When they grow up, he will always come with me. Yeah. But my daughter will always go with you. Because when they start growing up, there is things she will not discuss with me. Yeah. She will be discussing with you. But I will try to be in her life.
Yes.
So she doesn't have nothing to hide from me.
Yes, listeners with families will understand exactly what you're saying. So what are your hopes for your children for the future? You told us the story of your father particularly being a little bit disappointed that you, although very proud of you, but do you think the same situation will happen to you?
yes. Already, there's the rules. I put it on the fridge. School first, then anything else goes. So if when they comes from school, they see it. Daddy said, first school, then any hobby. So, but my children they're good in school, so I have to push them. If they're not good in school, I won't push them. So they're good in school, I tell them I'll do anything for you, as long as you want. And they are on the right track. So I'm not scared of, for sure they will go to school, they will go to university. Then when they finish, like my son always tell me he wants to be a lawyer. I say, lawyer, don't be a lawyer. You have to study a lot. Just do something easy. You went to school, you are graduate, then we see from there. But the problem, no one wants to take over the business. You see, which it's not fair. But I think my daughter for sure know. I think I have to have another baby. I will take over.
How old are your children now?
My daughter is 13, my son is 10.
Okay, so now it's time to talk a little bit about destiny and your hopes.
I'll tell you, when she wanted in Malta to represent Malta, I never thought she's going to win. Why? Because it's too difficult. Even when Federica, last 2 years, I said to my wife, it's difficult for her to win. She's very good, but the problem is they won't vote. As long as it's something voting, it's a problem. They won't like Malta to host it twice. So when we were going, my son, he believe in destiny. My son tells me, daddy, destiny is gonna win. I said to him, what do you mean? This one, no. You've been telling me every time, everywhere I go, she's going to win. For this, she's not going to win. You know, I went to Bulgaria just for a good performance. I want her to perform good, people to know her, that she have a good voice. But after the day of the final, you know, after they finish, they start calling the televoting. When they start calling the televoting, it was unbelievable. When she won, believe me, I'm speechless. I scream. It was like, never, believe me, never in my life I believe she's going to win. I just want her to perform very good and people will hear her voice. But it was a surprise, believe me. Up to today, it's a surprise for me.
Do you think that she has a long career in music ahead of her?
Yes, I think so. I think we're trying to take her to London, but at the age now, it's in. They told us she have to be 16. So I'm contacting my friends in Nigeria. I want her to sing with Nigerian musicians. You know, the market in Nigeria now in music is getting bigger.
Yes, Nigeria is of course a huge country, millions and millions of people, and also one of the most prosperous countries in Africa.
Yeah, yes, in music, in movies, now we're doing fine. So I'm trying to contact the biggest agent in Nigeria. Was one of my youth friends. So I'm trying, maybe when she's 16, I don't want to take 16, 13 now. When she's 16, I will take her to Nigeria. First, I'll take her to London. We'll see from there. Then I want to market her in Nigeria market and see. If you don't push, you never get.
No, absolutely.
So you have to push to
absolutely.
See.
Absolutely. How often do you visit Nigeria with your family?
Yeah, we're going next year, sometime 3 years, sometime 2 years, but most of the time they come and visit me.
Yes, I see. But your wife, Alexia, does she enjoy Nigeria?
Yes,
I mean, it was difficult maybe sometimes for you to get used to Malta. And when Alexia visits Nigeria, I don't think that many Maltese people visit Africa. So what was her reaction?
I tell you, the first time she visited Nigeria was 1999.
Mm-hmm.
She was crying when she was coming back. And she told me she wants to go back again, you know. Nigeria, just, you know, people don't understand. They said Africa, they think Africa is just like a bush place. Nigeria is not like that. Nigeria is a city. You know, whatever you have here, the best club, we have it in Nigeria. The best football pitch, we have it in Nigeria. So when she came, she really enjoyed it, you know. Most Nigerians' wife, they will tell you more better. When they go, like, choose wife, well, they enjoyed it. It's a place, I mean, you know, when you go there as a white man, you see people, even though they don't have nothing, they are happy.
Mm-hmm.
You see children smiling. Mm-hmm. When my wife was in my local place, mm-hmm. you see people dancing for her. She was crying, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, people with good hearts.
So she was meant to feel very welcome.
Yes, you know, they make her feel very welcome. She was crying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were touching her. They were playing with her. They were dancing for her, you know. Mm-hmm. When she passed, ah, look Oyibo, like the white people say, Oyibo, look Oyibo, ah, she came to Nigeria. Ah, you know, she was like filled with, you know, with joy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We went to this orphanage to give these children,
mm-hmm.
this gift, you know. Normally when I go and give them gifts. So went there and she gave them $500 then, $500. And I bought rice, like tomatoes, food stuff
mm-hmm.
for them there. And we start talking to them, you know, when she was asking them their story and she was crying. I said, that's why I don't want to bring you this place.
Mm.
You start emotionally, you know, funny,
yes.
And you know, what she enjoyed really is, like, even though they are poor, side are poor, they are happy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're very happy. They don't. It's not the money.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody just want to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's content with what or she have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my wife always tell me, even though when you interview her, she will tell you when she's old, she want to live in Nigeria. Because in Nigeria, normally when I take in the village, we have natural foods.
Mm-hmm.
Not something plant or manure. If you want orange, it's natural. You just
take it from the tree.
Take it from, yes, you know, we call it the village.
Okay.
It's a very quiet place where you can, it's like going to Gusu, where you relax.
Okay.
So I took her there, you know, I took her to a farm. You see potato growing. If you want to take potato to cook, you know, everything is just natural. It's not something, and it was like, oh God, I said, okay, let me teach you how to do it. Even my father used to take her around and like plant, dig the holes. This is how we plant it, you know. So she was like, ah. I said, you've seen it all, because when I took her, I want her to see the real Nigeria, not the rich part,
mm-hmm.
not the poor part, not the middle class. I took her everywhere. So to compare, the rich, the way they live, the rich, they're not happy. So we went to the average, you know, when the poor, that they are the most people she really want to be with. Not everybody, because it's everywhere. Instead, the rich are like snob, you know. So she really enjoyed it. She's been there twice. She wants to go every time, you know. But the problem is, you know, when you have a family business, you know, like if I travel night, I affect the business, you know, because I'm in charge of the stock keeping, the salesman, and she is the one that's always in the computer,
uh-huh.
and you know, so
it's difficult
to travel all the time. Yeah, that's the problem.
Africa is a huge continent. Maybe you can talk a bit about your corner of Africa, Nigeria. What are Africa's problems? And personally, how do you think Africa can move forward and perhaps become as prosperous as other continents?
We always pray for a good leader.
Mm.
Our problem in Africa is the politicians, is the government, without no direction. We're one of the richest in the world. We have all the resources, the oil, the gas, the gold, but still here there is poor people. For you just to work as a clerk in a minister of finance, you are a millionaire. I'm talking of a clerk. It's a millionaire. They say billionaires. In Nigeria, we have a lot of billionaires. A lot of billionaires. But they cannot declare their money, so they are not billionaires. They just go for the oil wealth, the resources wealth. They're not developing the country. They're not thinking about, like, European. Look, just watch Malta. Malta without no resources, everybody's living a good life.
Okay. Almost everybody,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, almost everybody, let's put it that way, is living a good life without no resources. Imagine Malta having resources. Imagine what I have resources. That means everybody will be a millionaire here. That's the problem we have in Africa. Not because people look at Africa, even do you believe that? Even hurt. People die young in Nigeria. A lot of people die because no money. I will tell you a story that I cried. Last 2 years I was in Nigeria, there was this woman giving birth, but the baby is upside down. They didn't know. That the baby is not, the head is not yet, so they have to do emergency operation to save that baby. But you know what, because of just 300 euro, the doctor said if they don't bring the money, it's not going to do it. So if they don't bring the money, this baby is going to die, the mother is going to die. Unfortunately, I was there. I have to pay the money.
For a stranger?
For a stranger. I cried. This is the problem in our country. With no, if the government can just only help, just to provide health care for the people, don't worry, take the whole money. Health care is, that's what the people want. At least you will survive many lives.
Yes, health. Yes, investment in health.
Many lives. That's what I pray for every day. Imagine my mom. I brought my mom here to do operation, which cost me almost 9,000. But in Nigeria, she would die. If I leave her in Nigeria, she would die. But because she have privilege, she have me. They took her everywhere in Nigeria. There was no, they said they don't know what is wrong with her. My brother used to take her everywhere. I said, give me 3 weeks, let me bring her to Malta. We came here, scan everything, they find out what is wrong with her. Okay. After 3 weeks, she's fine. She's fine now. You know, this is the problem. At least help your people.
Yes.
Take the money, but do something that they will never forget you. No government.
Do you feel colonialism? I mean, Nigeria has been independent just before
since
Malta. 1960. I mean, has that left a bad legacy for Nigeria? Or do you think that Nigerians need to take more responsibility for themselves?
Like you said, Nigeria have to take responsibility for themselves. Even though the corruption started with the America and the Britain. But we are the same people who can stop it. But the problem, if you try to stop it, they will overthrow you, the Americans. Americans rule Nigeria, no doubt about it. Who they want, we stay there.
You mean they own the companies?
Yeah,
and
the company, Bill Cheney, the vice president of Bush.
Okay.
He owns every oil wealth there.
So you're very bitter about American meddling, shall we say.
They control the world. They control. So if they know, you see, you look what is happening to FIFA. If America wants you, they want you. You see what is happening to FIFA? Because America wants them. They can interfere. They got all of them. So you want to tell me America, I don't know how many billions of Nigerians have money in American bank, in Sweden, everywhere. So they have the money. With their wage, it's not possible. So they can stop it. They don't want to stop it. Our politicians, how would I put it, they are greedy. But still, yeah, they are greedy because people put them there. So you have to do what they say.
Right, let's move on from Nigeria and its problems. Earlier we discussed the beauties of Nigeria as well. Let's talk about Malta's bad things and Malta's good things. First of all, what are the things you don't like about Malta and living here?
I tell you, really, there's not much more things I don't like. But the other things I don't like is when you go to a club, let me put it, when you go out, for example, I travel to Spain now with my family. When I go into a restaurant, as long as I'm coming to spend my money, you have to welcome me. But sometimes Malta is not the same. When you want to go and spend your money, they don't allow you if they don't know you, which is wrong.
Is this another race thing?
Yes.
You get suspicious looks?
Yes. Okay. I will give you example. I forgot to say it up before. Some of my friends came from London. A visit. I have friends that comes, like I go and visit them. We went to a club. They allow me in.
They don't allow
because they know you?
Because they know me.
Uh-huh.
They don't know them. They ask ID card. And people are going in without no ID card. Then I turn, I said, they are with me. All right. They let them in.
You know, discrimination.
Yes.
Racial profiling.
Yes, not. Yeah. You know, it's. Uh-huh. It's just. If this. The only thing I see. You know, it bothers a lot of us living here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know,
mm-hmm.
you feel some of my friends, maybe they want to go out and eat something or some. In restaurants, it's not a problem, but in a bar or somewhere, it's a problem. But at the end of the day, things that are good are a lot of things.
Yes, let's talk about the good things then.
The good thing, Maltese people are good, you know. When I came to Malta, you know, some of my friends tell me, oh, Maltese, they are Jack Bean. I said to them, yeah, there's no Jack Bean.
Jack Bean in Maltese?
Yes.
Did you learn the Maltese language?
Yes.
Do you speak Maltese?
A little bit. I understand all when I speak a little bit.
Okay.
So they tell me, oh, a lot of Maltese are Jack Bean. I said, yeah, you don't find Jack Beans. In your own Nigeria, we are hundred. We have Jack Beans a lot. So yeah, you don't find. It's natural.
Mm-hmm.
You don't call them. You don't use the bad one to judge the good one. So just please don't tell me these things. You can tell those that came new.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me these things. You know, Maltese, I tell you, I've been here. I enjoyed them. You know, I've lived with them. They've got good hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, they've got good hearts. They don't want to most of them don't want to see you suffer.
Mm-hmm.
They give, not like other countries. They give from their hearts. They help from their hearts. They, if you have problem, they come and try to solve the problem if they can. So the good, if they can do that, I don't want to see the bad part.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see the bad part. That is enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's enough for me. You know, yes, in life, if the good are more than the bad, so why I look the bad?
Mm-hmm.
It's when the bad are, that is when I look. The good things, the good people are more. So I don't look. This is why I explain to my friend. I understand them. I understand their cry. I try to tell them. I try to help them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, I will never bring them down and say, oh, yes, why would they do this to you? Yes, it's wrong, but I'll tell them. But think about this. Why can't you do this so that they won't do it to you anymore? You know, so to lift them up, not to feel, why, you know? But the good parts are more bigger than the bad parts. So what's in life? If you have a good heart, if you are a giver, what else I have to complain about? So Maltese people, most of them are good.
Thank you very much, Indubizi Chukwuniere, who has been in Malta for 20 years, originally from Nigeria. He has a business here in Malta and is also assistant coach of Hibernians FC. Thank you very much for being on the program, Minainain Baranin on Campus FM.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
U dik kienet edizzjoni oħra tal-programm Minajnejn Barranin, fejn jiena kol il-fitz niltaqgħu niddiskuti t-tajjeb u dak li hu inqas tajjeb f'pajjiżna. Ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni jew oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tmienja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu kif ukoll tistgħu issibuh fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM.